On behalf of Torah Motion, welcome everybody. It's a pleasure to welcome back Mark Trencher, Rabbi Mark Trencher. I know he doesn't like to use the title, but he did earn it. And of course, the second part of our series on his Nishma research, which he founded. And today we'll be discussing the finances of Orthodoxy, a really important topic, a tough topic. And it's a pleasure to welcome him. Since I'm not able to stay for the class today, I'll just mention, of course, this evening at 8:30, the Parsha Shir of Yaakov Jaffe of Maimonides will be giving the Parsha Shir at 8:30 this evening. And tomorrow, of course, I'll have the regular Shir on the Siddur, Please God, at 9 a.m. And we look forward to learning with you. And like I say, I hope you've all signed up for the winter program. And we look forward to learning with you. And Rabbi Trencher, Bavakasha, it's all yours.
Okay, thank you very much, Rabbi Kelman. I do have the chat window open, so time permitting, I may answer questions as they're posed. If not, we'll get to them at the end. But so I mentioned last week that we've done 10 studies. One of the studies that we did back in 2017, at the very end, we presented people with a list of 27 issues facing the community, and we asked them which of these are problems, serious problem, somewhat of a problem, then we ranked them. So on the list of 27 items, the one that came out number one, 89% of people said that the cost of Jewish schooling is a problem. Number four on the list was the cost of maintaining an Orthodox home. Time permitting, I'll come back later and tell you what some of the others are. There were some interesting things on that list. So we decided back in 2019, we were going to do some research on the cost of Orthodoxy. The finances, and then of course the pandemic hit and everything changed. There were huge financial impacts. So we ended up doing a few surveys about the pandemic, but we always had it in our minds to come back to do this survey specifically on the cost of finances. And we felt that this was really the right time. You know, the economy is still not at 100% with inflation and everything. But the timing is right. The financial impact of the pandemic has kind of largely dissipated. So we did this survey specifically on the issue of finances. And the goal of the survey was very simply, we wanted to probe both factually and emotionally facts. What are people making? What are their incomes? How much are they saving for retirement, home equity? How much are they spending on schooling, on Jewish education? And all the other things that related to, so that's the factual. We also wanted to probe emotionally. How is this affecting people? How is it affecting their feelings of Jewishness, their connection to their Orthodoxy? And how many people are thriving? And a lot of people are thriving. How many are barely making it? A lot of people are barely making it. And how many are underwater? There are some that are underwater. So we're very fragmented economically, financially. And finally, there's a question at the end in which the goal of the survey was not to give advice necessarily, but we did ask people if you had the chance to give advice to a family that was struggling with costs, what advice would you give them? So that makes a very interesting reading. This was an online survey. I'll tell you a few things very quickly about the survey. We reached the community mainly through shuls. Rabbi Dratch at the RCA did inform all of the RCA rabbis of the survey. The RCA tends to be very supportive of research, and many of the rabbis then included in their emails, in their shul bulletins. They might announce it on Shabbos, on Shabbat, from the pulpit. But in the end, we got 2,300 responses, a nice mix, about 1,300 modern Orthodox and close to 1,000 Haredi. So they are very different from each other. So all the results in the survey are broken out for modern Orthodox and Haredi. I will tell you, though, that both groups were actually younger on average than what we've seen in previous surveys. The modern Orthodox, their median age was in the low 40s. The Haredi was in the mid 30s. That's quite a bit younger. So I am thinking that since the announcement went out to the same group, it may be that these people in the middle ages with kids in school who are working and not retired, these are the people that when they get an invitation to a survey about finances, these are the ones that say, okay, I have thoughts on this, I'm going to respond. So this is self-selection. It's not a bad thing, but we're hearing from people that are in the years where they have the expenses. We just need to remember that there are people out there that are retired that don't have a lot of these expenses, and they are underrepresented in the survey results. The survey, interestingly enough, all the surveys we do, I do send out announcements to about 40 Jewish newspapers. And there is interest in this survey. So there was a group, there was a music group about 30 or 40 years ago called Country Yossi and the Schniebelhoppers. Any of you remember that group? They had a song in which they sang they wanted to be, their goal in life was to be on the cover of the Jewish press. Well, I can now tell you that I have achieved another of my bucket list items. This survey actually made it to the cover, to the front page of the Jewish press. The survey is about the roles of women that were not covered. The survey is about people's connectedness to the Judaism, about Balei Tshuva and people leaving off the Derech. None of those made it to the Jewish press. But the issue of cost made it to the front page of the Jewish press. There's a lot of interest in this topic, That is good. So we started by asking just some basic metrics. We wanted to get a feel of where people stand. I'm going to tell you some numbers about incomes and savings. One of the questions I get asked sometimes is, okay, can I compare my household incomes to the median of what your survey? You know, the median is the midpoint. I say, well, you know, my advice is not to really compare yourself to the median, because the median includes people of all ages. The median includes people who have no kids or singles, people who have one or two kids, people who have five or six kids, people who have kids in college. The median includes people who are living in Teaneck or the Five Towns. And the median also includes people who are living in places like Kansas City and Minneapolis, which are lower cost. So I advise people, look at the numbers to get a sense of what the community is doing, but don't compare yourself to the community necessarily. So in terms of income, and the numbers are very high. The median, which is the midpoint, so it isn't the average. We took everybody from the highest to the lowest. This is the midpoint, and so I should tell you that we, for consistency, this is based on the U.S. respondents. We did not get a lot of respondents from other countries. Some of the other surveys we've done, we did break out Israel, Britain, Canada. This one we didn't. But the median household income, this is household, is for modern Orthodox was $188,000, which is high. You have a lot of people living in very expensive areas. I was more surprised that the median income for the Haredi families was $136,000, which is high. I don't think our survey captured the most insulated, like Kiryat Joel, the Satmar, the people that really don't make much money at all. I think in the Haredi group, we're looking at the group from the center to the left. I think the really insulated group, and some of them don't speak English and would not respond to a survey in any case. So I think we need to remember that. But the incomes are high. The article in the Jewish press, the reporter went at the end of the article, he interviewed some Hasidic people in Borough Park. And one person said, yeah, I'm not surprised at that number. You know, I have nine kids. And if you're not making $100,000 somehow between you and your spouse, you can't even survive in that neighborhood. So maybe the 136, I thought it was a little bit high. But the bottom line is that the incomes in the Orthodox world are high. We also looked at assets. We asked them how much you have in assets. And for the modern Orthodox, they had about $70,000 in savings, about $220,000 in retirement. A lot of them own homes. The Haredi assets are much lower. The Haredi assets, they had about $20,000 in savings and $40,000 in retirement. This is all on the survey. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about the specific financial numbers. They're all in the report, so you can look those up. You know, we did ask people, you know, what they're worried about. So we asked them a series of questions. So does your income cover your expenses? So not a lot of people said no. We asked, does your income cover your expenses? So fewer than 20% said, no, my income does not cover my expenses. A lot of the others said it barely covers my expenses. The area where people were most concerned about was in retirement savings. So fewer than half of the modern Orthodox said that they feel comfortable that they're going to have enough money to retire, that they're going to have enough money in savings when they retire. Fewer than half the modern Orthodox. And less than one third of the Haredi said, yeah, I feel comfortable. I'm going to have enough money when I retire. So people are struggling on the treadmill, paying the expenses now. The one area where it's hitting people is they're not really able to save for retirement. You know, there's a question that gets asked in many surveys of the U.S. Public, something like, if you had to quickly come up with $2,000 to cover an unexpected expense, would you be able to do it? And in the United States, 40% say no. 40% of households in the U.S. say if they had to come up with $2,000 to fix their transmission, I think the transmission costs more than that, but if they had to come up with $2,000 for a repair or something for a big plumbing job, they would not know where to come up with it. They would not have any idea where to come up with it. So the good news is that in our community, in the Orthodox community, the percentages are much lower. So in the modern Orthodox world, only about 10% said, no, I would not be able to come up with the money. And even the Haredi world, about 20% said that. So both those numbers are much better than in the secular non-Jewish world. And I think one of the strengths that we have, which comes out in some of the comments, is our network of support. I was asked the question, anywhere in your study, does it show anywhere in your study about tzedakah, people giving charity, and gemachs, associations for people, free loan societies? We didn't ask specifically about that, but you can see that's what's going on. We didn't ask, so the question was asked about how many rely on regular substantial funds from parents. We did ask, I'll get to it later on. We did ask, we included paying for tuition bills for grandchildren as one of the items in our list of expenses. I will tell you that in my calendar, on the 4th of each month, I have a repeating item, which reminds me to help some of my kids with their tuition bills. Yep, it's our pleasure. I will also tell you that when we asked that question back in 2017, and I mentioned that the cost of Jewish education was number one on the list, 89% said it was a problem. Interestingly enough, it was number one on the list across all ages, even for people who are retired, are aware that either they're aware that their kids are struggling, or they may also be helping out. So we didn't ask these people, do you rely on funds from your parents specifically? But I think a lot of people do. Turning to educational cost and attitude. So going into the survey, the conventional wisdom was that the cost of Jewish day school education is the number one expense. It may be number one. It's the number one expense hitting families. It is a significant expense. We did ask people, do you have children? Do you have children in grades K through 12? Do you have children in college or in a gap year in Israel or somewhere? So we know how many children they have. I will tell you that among the modern Orthodox, they typically had a median of about 3 kids. And among the Haredi, they had a median of about 4 kids. So remember, the Haredi don't have 4 kids. They actually have an average of between 6 and 7. That the median among U.S. Haredi families, Yeshivish and Hasidic, is 6.5. So when I say that in our survey they had 4, remember their average age, their median age was 34. So they're still having kids. So your typical respondent is 34, has 4 kids, and probably has another 2 or 3 coming. So it may get worse for a while before it gets better. So we did determine that for the families, the median amount that they're paying in tuition for K through 12 is about $31,000 a year. That's how much they're paying out of pocket after any kind of discount. And about 40% of them do get tuition assistance, and they get tuition assistance of about $7,000 a kid. So the total bill of $31,000 is probably $40,000 to $50,000 before any discounts. For the Haredi, they're paying a median of $20,000 a year. About half of them get tuition assistance. In the Haredi world, the schools give an average of about $3,000 per child. So there, they have more children in school, but the tuitions are lower. More of them get assistance. Although the assistance is lower, in the end, they're paying a little bit less tuition. So the numbers are 31,000 for modern Orthodox and 20,000 for Haredi families. That's how much these families are paying every year in tuitions. And in the U.S., it's not tax deductible. It's you have to make, to pay the 31,000, you have to make 45,000 gross. So you can see it's a big chunk of the income that goes to this. You know, we've been asking in surveys that we've done in the past, we always ask people, what kind of school does your child go to? And 87% of the modern Orthodox are in an Orthodox Jewish day school or yeshiva. And most of the rest are in another kind of Jewish school. It could be a non-Orthodox school, a Solomon Schechter. It could be a community school. It could be what we would call a pluralistic school or a community school that's not specifically connected to an Orthodox community, but has a mix of kids. You know, even in Orthodox day schools, there's a mix of kids, but a very high percentage go to these Jewish schools. You know, one of the questions that we asked was, after going through all these questions about how much you're paying, we asked people, would you consider in the future, over the next 5 years or so, would you consider taking your child out of a Jewish school because of cost, you know, not because they needed special education or something, but would you consider? So among the Haredi, 1% said, yeah, I would consider it, 1%. Among the modern Orthodox, 7% said it. So the numbers are still low. The numbers are still low. We saw in the comments that we'll come to later that, yeah, people, the general view is that Jewish education is very expensive. It's not perfect. In our 2017 survey, we asked people to rate schools and all kinds on their secular studies and their Jewish studies, on teaching midos, teaching behavior, and all kinds of programs. It's not perfect. In many ways, the secular education in a public school is better, but people view it as really, really important, and only a very small minority would consider taking their child out of a Jewish school for reasons of cost. You know, that's true. So one of the big differences between the U.S. and Canada is that in the U.S., I mean, the Orthodox Union has been fighting for some kind of grants from the government to help with the schooling. I know that in Canada, you know, obviously the secular education, if the secular education is equivalent to the public schools, then why would that not be covered by the government? But, you know, in a very broad extension of separation of church and state in the U.S., which we have, people are very, very, in the U.S., there's a real fear of the mixing of government and religion. And even though we've been saying in the U.S. is, you know, help with the secular part of education, doesn't happen. So that is different. That is different in Canada. I'm not that familiar with exactly how it works in Canada, but I know that financially it's somewhat more advantageous. Okay, so we did go through a whole long list of what people spend their money on Jewishly. We asked about shul dues, how much do you give in shul dues and donations to shuls, other Jewish organizations or charities to Douglas, how much you give there, summer camp. We ask about, have you taken any Jewish trips, Jewish-oriented trips, like a trip to Israel, like a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah trip? Have you made any simchas, weddings, bar mitzvahs? You know, we asked about other purchases specific to Orthodox Jewish life, matzahs for Pesach, lulav and esrog. Have you bought talis, tefillin, books, svarim, mikvahs, all that kind of stuff? We asked how much you spend. So there was a long, long list. Now, in looking at the median, so the report shows if we added them all up for modern Orthodox and Haredi, came up with numbers, but what you know, what is the cost of Orthodoxy? If I say I'm paying $1,500 to a shul, I could say, yeah, that's the cost of being Orthodox. But my neighbor goes to the Emanuel, which is a very large conservative shul synagogue, and he also pays $1,500. So the fact is that half of the about half of the non-Orthodox also belong to synagogues. So we can't really say that everything we spend on shuls is a cost of Orthodoxy. Can we say that everything we spend on summer camps is a cost of Orthodoxies? I mean, other people go send their kids to summer camps. You might say that an Orthodox summer camp is ridiculously expensive, and that's very true. Simchas, people make weddings. We make weddings. You might say that our weddings are larger, more elaborate. You might say we have sheva brachas. That's one of the things we included in the list. But the bottom line is that some of the things that we spend money on are not strictly a cost of Orthodoxy. Yes, there's something that's common in the Orthodox community, but we kind of looked at it and said, how much more are we spending? And the numbers that I came up with, and you can read it, and it's explained in some detail in the report, is for all the items I mentioned, in an average year, a modern Orthodox family, now this doesn't include schooling, and it also doesn't include food, and it also doesn't include the cost of where you live, expensive community, but just cash out of pocket for all these things was about $4,000 for modern Orthodox and about $6,000 for the Haredi. So that's kind of out of pocket, day-to-day, week-to-week expense, what people spend on these things. So I mentioned kosher food. We did not ask people what you spend on kosher food. I'd love to get 100 families to keep diaries. I can tell you how much we spend on food, on total food. So my wife likes to buy organic, so that increases our budget. Other people spend a lot of money on food for Shabbos. You know, challahs are expensive. We did ask people about the impact of kosher food. We asked people, does the higher cost of kosher food affect your budget? And one out of six people, both modern Orthodox and Haredi, said, yeah, the cost of kosher food has a significant negative impact on my budget. Significant. Don't forget, there's other things going on here, like large families, Shabbos and Yontif. We asked separately, does the impact of Shabbos and Yontif affect your food budget? And similarly, one in six said, yeah, it's a significant negative impact. Now, some people said somewhat has somewhat of a negative impact. If I combine people who said somewhat negative and significant, then a majority of every group said, yeah, food has an impact on my budget, and Shabbos and Yom Tov have an impact on my budget, which is not surprising. I mean, we talk about the non-Jewish world having Thanksgiving once a year. We have it 65 times a year, right? So it's wonderful. And we did ask the question about that, and people said it is totally worth it. Shabbos is a special day. We have special meals. But people do it as an expense. You know, I did come up with a number. If you look at the U.S. Department of Agriculture says that the median U.S. family spends $8,000 a year on food, which is about $670 a month. It's just my wife and I, because we were empty nesters, but I don't remember ever, you know, maybe the month after Pesach, because we had a huge amount of leftovers. I don't remember a month in our 51 years maybe when we were newlyweds and the costs were lower. But certainly in the last 30 years, I never remember our food budget being anywhere near $670. And I do keep track of the data. So I did ask around, and I think I got a number, you know, people from the numbers I got from people that, you know, typically $1,000 to $1,300 US dollars monthly on food is kind of what people spend, which is like $12,000 to $15,000 annually. So if you compare that to the $8,000, you might come up with a number of $4,000 to $5,000 a year more that we spend on food. Kosher food and Shabbos meals and Yontif meals and family get togethers. So that's kind of an estimate. So it is significant. It is good. So it ends up being in terms of dollars, excuse me. And then in terms of dollars, it ends up being kind of similar to the first category, which was the donations and all the other things. So that's the second. But, you know, something that I think is very significant is the cost impact of where people live, because we all have to live, because if you're Orthodox, you live within walking distance of a shul. So geographically, you end up cramming a lot of people into a small geographic area. The loss of supply and demand, prices go up. We ask people, does where you live, the community where you live, have an impact on your household budget? And here, one out of three said, it has a significant negative impact. And if I add the people who said somewhat negative, it ends up with 2/3. So 2/3 of the modern Orthodox and 2/3 of the Haredi said that, yeah, where we live has a significant negative impact on our budget. We did ask one final question, said, okay, so you're Orthodox. Are there areas where you're not spending money, where somebody non-Orthodox might be spending money? So maybe you don't go to the theater as often. And yeah, so a certain minority said, yes, we do save money because we do save money in that. So we went through, at the end of the survey, we went through the survey. Let me see. Okay. In Germany, there's a law on the books for over 100 years that requires the government to support private or religious or private education. It's a huge help to the price of education and nursery care. The survey where I mentioned, where I asked, how is this a serious concern? And I said that the cost of Jewish education was number one. The cost of Jewish education, we did have about 200 people from Israel who responded. And I don't know why, but the cost of Jewish education was number one on the list among them as well. So if you think it's free, apparently it's not. Apparently it's not. The government does get part of it, but they view it as expensive also. And their incomes are lower. So I'm not familiar. You know, I don't know how much of a subsidy they pay in Germany, but that's interesting. Kosher minced beef is up to $30 to $35 per kilogram in Ottawa. Okay, so that's per kilogram. So that would make it about $13 to $15 a pound. I don't know. I mean, Costco sells kosher ground meat for $11 or $12 a pound. So it's kind of comparable. Lately, there's been a shortage of chicken, so that's gone up. I don't know. You know, I'm curious whether the plant-based foods, which are actually healthy, will make inroads. They're not cheap, but if you're looking for an alternative, I know the Orthodox Union so far has not the impossible pork so far has no kosher supervision. Although the OU said it's plant-based, so it might be interesting to try out, but. People did comment on meat and on the cost of meat on Shabbat, so that's true. So at the end of this long series of questions, and we intentionally put the question I'm going to tell you now, we intentionally put it at the end of a survey because we wanted people to think about what you make, think about what you spend. We couldn't ask this question at the very beginning. The question was, Orthodoxy has costs attached to it. Is it worth it? Is it worth it? Very bluntly, is it worth it? We couldn't ask that in the beginning because we wanted to really get people thinking about this. And I thought the results were very positive. We asked people, is it worth it? And people could agree fully, yes, it's totally worth it. They could agree somewhat, you know, I pretty much think it's worth it. They could be in the middle ground. They don't agree. They don't disagree. Mixed feelings. A lot of people said, yeah, you know, I'm not so sure, but it is what it is. So I looked at the last two groups, people who disagree. They disagree strongly or they disagree somewhat. So these people disagree that it's worth it. These are the people that are negative. In 2017, I asked the following question. I said, how important to you is your Orthodox observant life? How important is it to you that you're an Orthodox observant Jew? This was asked among all modern Orthodox Jews. And 9%, about 75% said very, very important. My being Orthodox is a very important part of my life. And about another 15% said it's somewhat important. And 9% said, you know, it's not that important. There are other things in my life that are more important. 9% said it's not important. I sometimes get asked the question, what percent of the Orthodox, of the Jewish community is at risk of leaving the community, going off the derech, as they say, you know, leaving Orthodoxy, which is a trend more among the young. And I sometimes point to that 9% figure that I got back in 2017. So it turns out in this survey, when I asked, is the cost of Orthodoxy worth it? You know, 9% disagreed. 9% said it's not worth it. It's not worth it. So it was a similar result in that, 91% say it's definitely worth it, or they have mixed feelings, and 9% really are in a bad place in terms of their feelings. Among the Haredi, it was 3%. Only 3% of the Haredi said it's not worth it. What people said, the vast majority of what people said was, it is worth it. Some quotes. Everything in life is a priority. People who are not Orthodox or not Jewish have their priorities. Being Orthodox comes with priorities and costs. It's all about choices. Somebody else said, I want to raise my children loving Orthodox life. And although I am sometimes anxious about higher costs, I don't want to relay that stress to my kids. I should tell you that several people commented that my question three people said, this is a stupid question. Why is it a stupid question? Because the idea that it's not worth it is so alien to them. They would never even think that. What kind of ridiculous question is it? And one person said, this survey was obviously written by a person who's not Orthodox, because anybody who's Orthodox would never ask a question like this. So I am actually Orthodox. But, we could ask questions to find out what people think. But yeah, a few people said it's a ridiculous question. It's not a question of whether I will spend a lot to prepare amazing Shabbat food for the family. It's a necessity. And the same with other necessities for living an Orthodox life. The person who raised the question, she joined late, is there a source sheet? I will post at the end a link, and you can see to my website. You can read the full report. The good news is it's a 4-page version. That's a very quick read. That has a lot of information. The full report is all the charts and graphs, and there's a bunch of articles there you can read as well. So I will post that. Some of the other people said there's a lot of frivolous spending on entertainment in the secular world that we don't involve ourselves in. The issues are primarily if you are worried about keeping up with the Joneses in our circle. A lot of people said that. A lot of people said you don't have to keep up with the Joneses. And finally, Orthodoxy has costs like esrog, tefillin, and shetels. But being from is the only way I want to live, so it's not even part of any financial cost-benefit analysis. It's a necessity. I did mention that we did look at, in the survey, we looked at modern Orthodox versus Haredi. There's also a section in there where we look at different subgroups. And this particular question of is the cost worth it, we did look at the subgroups. The group that had the most positive attitude was the yeshivish group. So the Haredi are divided into two groups, Hasidic and yeshivish. The yeshivish had the most positive feelings. They have higher incomes than the Hasidim. Their schools are better. Their schools cost more. They more often have some secular studies. There's a whole bunch of things going on there. But the yeshivish had the most positive attitude. The attitudes get improved significantly over age. As for people over age 55, almost never feel that it's not worth it. Interestingly enough, men have more negative attitudes than women. So I mentioned that the negativity was 9%. Among men, it was 11%. Among women, it was 7%. Okay. And the other thing I'll mention is we divided people into two groups, people who live in very expensive neighborhoods and people who live in less expensive neighborhoods. And that is a factor as well. So these are all the kind of the factors that. Okay. Maybe I have some time. I'll read you a few more of these comments because I think that they're interesting. Some of these are a little bit more negative. I'm happy to be Orthodox, but many of the aspects of an Orthodox lifestyle that incur additional costs are unnecessary and frivolous. We try our best to avoid these pitfalls, but some, such as housing costs, are unavoidable to a large degree. Yeah, the housing costs are our issue. Okay. A lot of the costs are not really even religious, but rather social in nature. Dress a certain way, host certain events, go to certain trips, vacations, etc. So there's a reality here that, overall it's worth it. The costs are worth it. The things people spend money on are worth it. especially for Shabbat. Some of the things are necessities of Jewish life. The lulav, the esrog of books, the siddurim, but other things are not. Other things are not, and people need to kind of look at what they're spending their money on. We did ask a final question: do the financial costs affect your religious feelings? We didn't give people a checklist; we give people just a box. Does it affect your religious feelings? And the number one answer: 2/3 of the people just said not at all, and they didn't even give it. They just said no. We said, does it affect your Jewish feelings? And explain why you say that. So 2/3 of all the people said, nope, not at all, nothing. That's all they said. It doesn't affect me religiously at all. Among the rest, many said that it has some, there is some negative feeling. I'll read just a few of these comments. You know, but the key message is that even for people that are financially stressed, the vast majority of them have positive attitudes in terms of one, it's bottom line, it's worth it. I wouldn't want to be not Jewish, not Orthodox. I think it's a better lifestyle and it's challenging, but bottom line, it's good for me religiously and it's not negative. Okay, just a few comments because there are a significant number of people out there who really are struggling. And I don't want the end result of this survey to be that people are not struggling, but the community is divided into those who are thriving and those who are making do and those who are struggling. And they often live in the same neighborhoods. There are neighborhoods where people are significantly helping, where those with funding are significantly helping those who are struggling. Just a couple of comments. It's really, really hard, and that should be acknowledged and recognized by the community. I'd say don't be afraid to reach out for help or support through community programs. And they list a bunch of community programs. Local rabbis who often have some funds for different causes. Several people said in the comments, don't be embarrassed to ask for help. It's expensive lifestyle. Don't be embarrassed. Ask for help if you need to. Ask for a reduction in your tuition if you need it. Ask for a loan to tide you over if you need it. I'd also say that it often requires sacrifice to maintain from lifestyle, so not going on vacation, canceling cable, having only one car, not eating meat during the week, not going out much, etc. All things my family did may be necessary in the short term. The struggle is real. My goal in doing the survey was to kind of shed light on what the numbers are. If you want to hear a really, really interesting half hour talk, and I'll post this in the chat box. Rabbi Jeremy Weider, who's a Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva University, gave a talk, which is really amazing. He was going to give a halachic talk. This is in the Beis Medrash at YU with hundreds of their Semicha students. And he ended up getting up there and saying, I really can't talk about what I was going to talk about. I have to talk about the challenge of the community and the challenge that all you 22-year-old guys, what you're getting into in your lives, living in an expensive community. So if you Google Weider Communal Responsibilities, you'll find it. It's 30 minutes. It's really interesting.
He is giving a survey. He's a retired rabbi and specializing in doing the surveys of the Pew Report and stuff like that. He's now talking about the cost of orthodoxy. What it costs them, the amount of money that people are making, the median income in the Haredi world versus the modern Orthodox world, and what people pay for tuition, and what do they, how many people are saying, is it worth it, it's not worth it, and stuff like this. And don't be embarrassed, ask for help, because you see how difficult, and someone wrote in the cost of meat.
Broadcasting.
So he was compared to the state, and said it's just about a dollar more and all of that per pound. But anyways, I'm just telling you actually would be interested in this, because you would be.
Okay. So that was a good summary. Thank you. I also posted in the chat box. So I posted Rabbi Jeremy Weider's talk. I also posted in the chat box where all the reports are available. There's also some articles available. Everything is available there. You can download it. Okay. Did we ask how many women work outside the home? Not in this survey, but we have it in other surveys. I will tell you that most of these families, the modern Orthodox families, are very, very predominantly two-income households, which is necessary. In the yeshivish and Hasidic worlds, it's a little bit different. They're very often one income. But even there, in the yeshivish world, it's common for the man, for the husband to learn in Kollel for a few years after marriage while the wife works. And at some point, they may both be working, but they have a lot of children. So that's an issue. So I want to come back to, because we have a few minutes left. So I mentioned in the beginning, the list of 27 items that we asked people, is this a problem? Is that a problem? And originally the talk of the, Rabbi Kelman put over the title he gave to my talks last week and this week was challenges and opportunities in the community. So I wanted to just share with you some issues that I think, some of what I think are the challenges and opportunities in the community. So I mentioned that number one on the list of problems out of 27 was the cost of Jewish schooling. And number four was the cost of maintaining an Orthodox home. So let me go through, I'm going to give you the top 10. These are the top 10 things that people said are a problem in the Orthodox community. Number 10 is the adequacy of funds to meet community needs. So again, here we have an issue relating to cost. Every organization is struggling, and do communities have the adequate funds to meet the needs? Now, number 9 is people feeling isolated. So I should tell you that we've done 10 surveys, and the next survey we're going to be doing is this, after every survey I do, I get phone calls and emails saying, well, what about singles? It seems that your surveys, that the issues are kind of couple focused. They really aren't. But you know, the singles are mixed in there with everyone else. So do we always break them out? So our next survey is going to be a survey of singles because they often feel isolated. They are one of the groups that feel isolated. There are other groups that feel isolated. People without children feel isolated. So our next survey will be about singles. And we're going to ask a lot of questions specifically about singles and dating, shiduchim. Which is actually number 8 on the list. Among the top 10 things that are really people, behavioral, attitudinal related. Number 7, it's a problem that people lack love for others in the community. Number 5, there's a problem of too many people are dishonest in business. And number 3 was there are too many people with inappropriate midot behaviors. It was interesting to me that all of those behavioral, attitudinal, interpersonal relationship items ended up in the top 10 list. So number 6 was anti-Semitism. It may be higher now. This was 2017. And the last one that I haven't mentioned yet is Agunot. So Agunot was number 2 on the list. The second biggest problem was Agunot. These are women who are divorced, but unable to get a Jewish religious divorce. So they're unable to remarry until they get that. You know, I think what's going on here with the fact that Agunot were number 2 on the list is that nowhere on the list really was there any issue about the role of women in Orthodoxy? So when we listed Agunot, that kind of highlighted to people the you know how we treat women, which is a problem. So I wanted to just share with you the rest of that list. Hold on. Oh. Well, there we go. Okay. You know, the Jewish community strengths and opportunities, the Jewish community does have, you know, I think we have at least five very, very important strengths. One is, as I mentioned before, when you ask people, how connected are you to your Orthodoxy? When you ask people, how connected are you to your Orthodoxy? The vast majority feel very, very connected to their Orthodoxy. And when we ask people, what are the things that give you the most joy as an Orthodox observant Jew? By a very, very wide majority, number one on the list, it's not Shabbos. It's not keeping kosher. It's not Jewish continuity. It's not Torah learning. It's not serving God, Avodas Hashem. Can you guess what's number one on the list? Well, I think you're all muted. Number one on the list was the really strong sense of community. So we have a very strong sense of community. That's a major strength. People do feel connected. People do feel connected to davening. They get a lot of value out of it. People feel strongly connected to their shuls. People learn often. Your typical modern Orthodox person engages in Torah learning a couple of times a week. And also one of the important strengths is the influx of Baalei Teshuva. As I mentioned last time, 40% of modern Orthodox Jews did not grow up Orthodox. Somebody asked about the link to Rabbi Reeder's talk. So let me. Okay. I'll get that to you. I'll go through quickly what I view some of the challenges, and then we'll have time for a few more questions. You know, to me, the biggest challenge in the Orthodox community today, nowadays, is cohesiveness. Cohesiveness, we're getting increasingly fragmented. The modern Orthodox world is fragmented between left and right. What are your views on the role of women? What are your views on the acceptance of LGBTQ? And the gap between the modern Orthodox and the Haredi is divided. It's divided politically. The modern Orthodox are split somewhat down the middle, not quite, but between left and right politically, Democrat, Republican. In the U.S., Trump, Biden, that split in the Haredi world, it has gone very much to the right. So the community is getting increasingly fragmented. You know, there are issues. The issue that recently is a major challenge is the community needs to develop and implement policies to deal with sexual abuse. So I gave a talk in 2018. They asked me to identify the issues that cause people to leave Orthodoxy. And very high up on the list was sexual abuse, but not incidences of sexual. People were not leaving because they personally experienced it or were aware of it. They were leaving because the community doesn't deal with it. So that's an issue. That's an important issue. You know, is the vaccine hesitancy a challenge? I don't know. You know, I mean, there is some truth to the fact that if you've had COVID, you have some immunity. But I personally wish that vaccine hesitancy was lower in the Haredi world. I mentioned singles. I think it's a definite challenge in terms of singles, integrating them into the community, making them feel wanted. The issue of dating and shidduchim is a problem. That needs to be addressed. I mentioned agunot. You know, I think there definitely will be issues in terms of raising the next generation of productive Orthodox Jews. Because I see that kids, Orthodox kids, have a very high level of disaffiliation, some level of alienation. Yeah, when you ask kids, I asked young people in their 20s to think back to their high school classmates, how many of them are still Orthodox? And on average, it was probably about 70% were still Orthodox, 30% weren't. So that's kind of a high level. That's kind of a high level of attrition. The last thing I'll say as far as a challenge is the modern Orthodox world, in terms of its size, is pretty much flat. We gain a few Baalei Teshuva every year. We lose 1% that make Aliyah to Israel every year. We lose a certain percentage of young people who become non-Orthodox. It's around 300 and something thousand. It's really been flat forever. The Haredi world is growing at about 4% a year. If you know your math, 4% a year means that they will double in about 18 years and they will quadruple in 36 years. That's like a generation, a little more than a generation. So, you know, whereas the modern Orthodox today are about 35% of the total Orthodox community, in another generation and a half, we might only be like 20% of the Jewish community. Thank you, Jennifer. Jennifer posted the link to Rabbi Reeder's talk. When the Orthodox Union first started their research department about 5 years ago, I remember one of the first topics they were going to study is, you know, Orthodoxy is represented these days. We have a strong voice in the Jewish community, and we interact with government leaders, and the governors of New York and New Jersey respect Orthodoxy, as does the president, et cetera, et cetera. Will that change when the face of American Orthodox Jewry is primarily Haredi? And I don't know if they ever studied that issue, but I think certainly the fact that modern Orthodoxy is kind of flat with our two children per family, while the Haredi with six are growing rapidly, the nature of the community will change. At the same time, the non-Orthodox community continues to shrink. So in 36 years, the U.S. Jewish population might be the similar 6 or 7 million, but the percentages of Orthodox, conservative, reform, Haredi, and modern Orthodox will be very, very different. Do you have data on modern Orthodox charitable giving rate? So we did ask the question in this survey about what people give, and you can look that up. You can look that up. We did ask, you know, we didn't specifically ask. We asked about giving to shuls and to other charities. So there was some of that in the study. Okay. Can we estimate the number of Haredim who become modern Orthodox or religious, respectively? The number of Haredim. Okay. So very few Haredim leave. There are Haredim who get disenchanted or alienated, whether they're yeshivish or Hasidic, and they go what's called off the derech. They become irreligious. They leave the Haredi community, and actually, very few say, I'm going to become modern. Some do, but it's very few. Many, many more become irreligious. Many, many more become irreligious, and they become angrily irreligious because they've gone through a very traumatic experience. Leaving that community is very traumatic. You know, I did a study in 2016 where we have pages and pages and pages of documents where we ask people, you know, what did you go through? What was it like? What do you want the community you left behind to know about you? So we don't know how many become irreligious. Everyone asks how many people leave the Haredi world and become irreligious. Yeah, I mean, I've heard numbers ranging from 2% to 10%, but nobody knows. But we do believe that very few of them become modern Orthodox. Yeah, Yerushalayim has a group of homeless young Haredi people who have no educational skills to survive. That is true. That's true. When you leave the, not so much the yeshivish world, but when you leave, if you're Hasidic and you leave the Hasidic world, you are really a stranger in a strange land. I mean, most of them have never been on the subway. They don't speak the language. They have no ability to get jobs. There are groups like Footsteps that provide social services, but it's true. These people, it's a very difficult situation for them. They don't have the skills to survive. Okay. Is anti-Semitism, anti-Zionism affecting university attendance among modern Orthodox? Among modern Orthodox, a very high percentage of people send their kids to Yeshiva University, Touro College. There are some colleges. The number one college in the United States in terms of Jewish students is the University of Maryland. and they have Hillels. But you know, you could be in an environment where you have a Hillel, which is very nice. You have Chabad, which is very nice. But you know, there still are many teachers who have strong anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, maybe anti-Semitic, but certainly anti-Zionist views. And it's tough. It's very tough being a student. Very tough being a student. One of the things we definitely need to do as a society is teach our high school kids how to talk back, which is difficult when you're a 19-year-old, a college freshman, and your professor is the authority figure. So that's very true. Okay. So are there any other questions? So I've tried to share with you last week and this week the huge flux in the community, some of the issues. We covered a lot of issues. The material that we covered in these 2 hours, you know, often we cover in more detail in 6 to 8 hours, but this kind of gave you a taste. As I mentioned, everything is available on my website. Feel free to download it. Also, at my website, on the upper right, there's a little link that says contact us. If you send me an email, I do promise I respond to every email. Does the gap year in Israel strengthen observance? The view is that being in Israel, whether it's a birthright trip or whether it's a vacation or whether it's a gap year, the research has shown that being in Israel certainly strengthens your love of Israel and your feelings for Israel. Being in a gap year, I can tell you that for my grandchildren, who've all gone through the gap year. And my grandson is in Israel now, and we have tickets. We have tickets to visit him in February. We'll see how that works out. From the kids that I know, kids have gone to Israel, and the vast majority of them have come back with strengthened observance. I don't know if there's a study. Just so you know, there's a website called the Berman Jewish Data Bank, which has it's a compendium of tens of thousands of research studies in the Jewish community mostly by academics and research firms that get uploaded. And if you go there, you could go there and type gap year, and you might find a study that's been done on this topic. So thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time with me. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me through the chat box. I'll stick around if anybody has any questions.
Thank you. Excellent.
Thank you.
Both lectures were so wonderful, so detailed, broad, sensitive, multidimensional. Just thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you. I appreciate that. I should also mention that this is, I retired 10 years ago. So all of this is my retirement. This is all my retirement project.
Oh my gosh.
And this year is my seventh year. It's my Shemitah year, my sabbatical year. So everything I'm doing this year, I am doing pro bono. So if you know any shuls that want their members surveyed, have them reach out to me.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you all.